Welcome to the Harmonia Early Music Podcast. I'm Janelle Davis. When life gives you lemons, make lemonade. It seems that's what Karl Ditters von Dittersdorf decided to do. In 1781, the Viennese composer pitched an idea to the music publisher, Artaria, for a set of 15 symphonies based on Ovid's Metamorphoses. Dittersdorf's proposal was to be a sort of collector's edition of symphonies, complete with synopses of selected myths, illustrated with newly commissioned engravings. Dittersdorf was rejected by the publisher, but he didn't give up. He shopped his idea around and had some success several years later with another firm who agreed to publish the first three symphonies, albeit without the engravings or front material. By this time, Dittersdorf had completed 12 out of the originally planned 15 symphonies. Born in 1739, Karl Ditters von Dittersdorf lived and breathed Viennese classicism. He rubbed noses with all the familiar people, even playing string quartets with Haydn, Mozart, and Van Hal at a friend's house. The son of a costume maker, Dittersdorf followed in his father's theatrical footsteps. In 1761, he took a job as the Imperial Theater Director for Count Giacomo Durazzo, and later oversaw the theater in his several subsequent employments, including those at Grossverein and the Johannesburg Castle. Dittersdorf was, in fact, a prolific composer of abstract instrumental music, symphonies, concertos, chamber music, and the like, but as noted, his theater blood ran thick too. His Ovid symphonies therefore seem a natural synthesis of these two pursuits of a composer drawn to the programmatic aspects of dramatic storytelling in music. The first performance of Dittersdorf's Ovid symphonies tells us a lot. In 1786, Dittersdorf finished an oratorio commissioned for the Musician Society and traveled to Vienna to hear the work performed. Dittersdorf also brought with him the 12 completed Ovid symphonies and arranged for their performance in the Augarten over the course of two concerts in May of that year, the same month that Mozart premiered his new opera, Le Nozze di Figaro. Dittersdorf, for his Augarten premiere, engaged a 40-piece orchestra and hired a copyist to make parts for them. Mozart's friend and patron, Baron Gottfried von Swieten, took notice and helped Dittersdorf sell and distribute tickets. Despite bad weather, a postponement, and some official red tape, the event was by all accounts a huge success, even lucrative for Dittersdorf. Still, the path to publication proved problematic. Aside from the first three symphonies that were published in the 1780s, the next in the series, numbers 4 through 6, remained in manuscript. Numbers 8, 10, and 11 were lost entirely, and three others, numbers 7, 9, and 12, now exist only as Dittersdorf's own arrangements for piano, four hands. Just why Dittersdorf decided to arrange his symphonies for piano isn't known, but a good guess is that he was making the best of his publishing debacle, hoping that the piano arrangements would be more marketable to a wider public. Now, over two centuries later, the wider public can listen to Dittersdorf's symphonies turned sonatas in a world premiere recording from historic keyboard specialists James Tibbles and Michael Salka. Let's explore Dittersdorf's musical take on Ovid's Ajax and Ulysses. As the story goes, the warrior Achilles has died. Ajax and Ulysses contend for his arms in a debate arbitrated by the commander of the Greek army. This first movement of Dittersdorf's symphony depicts Ajax as he makes his case. The second movement depicts Ulysses' appeal. For his part, Ajax gives solid arguments as to why he should receive the prized weapons. His rhetoric is technically good, proper, and effective, but also plodding. In his program note, Dittersdorf explains it this way, quote, "In writing the Allegro Moderato in a contrapuntal style, the composer wishes to depict an orator, who certainly exhibits his deep knowledge of rhetoric, but whose speech abounds with his schoolroom pedantry." Here's Ajax. ¶¶ By the 1780s, contrapuntal writing was certainly considered old-fashioned and doctrinaire, fitting for the figure of Ajax. But listen now to Ulysses' calm, charming, and confident response, set in the form of recitative. Ulysses is, as Dittersdorf describes it, an orator who can, quote, bind his audience to him through subtle delivery without transgressing the rules of the art. Ulysses' eloquence proves irresistible, and so, winning the contest of words with Ajax, he is awarded Achilles' armor. In the third movement, Minuet, in the A section, we hear Ulysses' victory depicted. And in the B section, Ajax's despair and defiance with the commander's ruling. The final movement follows the story to its dramatic end. Here's how Dittersdorf describes it. Irresolution, pain, ambition, shame, and rage alternate in this allegro molto. After the rage depicted in the two repeated section, Ajax stabs himself in the breast with the sword of Achilles. The blood streams out of the wound, but stops again. At that point, the composer is not capable of depicting the color or fragrance of the flowers, so he requests his audience, whether or not with closed eyes, that at the performance of the last adagio con molto, he must imagine a whole bed of the most wonderful flowers in a summer setting, which not only satisfies the eyes, but also the nose. Here's some of that allegro molto movement. We'll pick it up at the point of Ajax's suicide and listen through the beginning of the adagio when a purple-scented flower blooms from the place where Ajax's blood has fallen. pianists James Tibbles and Michael Salka are well matched in their performances, so seamlessly responsive in their back and forth that it's sometimes easy to forget that there are two players, and not only one, at the helm of the 1801 Walter Model Forte Piano on which they perform. The two other symphonies turned sonatas for hands that they play together on this recording tell the tales of Hercules and Jason. Knowing the stories makes all the difference in the listening, and it's especially delightful to have the composer's own descriptions of his music, like in the creeping chromatic sounds of Hercules' poisoning, or the closing heroic chaconne of Jason and the Golden Fleece. If you would like to hear these movements and the rest of Tibbles' and Salka's recording of Dittersdorf's Ovid Sonatas, you'll find a link to their CD on our website. Just visit harmoniaearlymusic.org, and while you're there, have a look at our archive of podcasts and shows. This has been the Harmonia Early Music Podcast. I'm Janelle Davis. Thanks for listening.